Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome in to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, our regular visit to the world of technology from a blindness or partially sighted perspective. I'm your host, Dave Williams. Don't forget, of course, Tech Talk, we love to hear from you. How's it going? What's working well? What could be working better? Our email address is techtalk@rnib.org.uk, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, where we welcome your messages, voice notes, and your feedback, questions, comments, all that good stuff. Right, this week we'll be speaking with actor and director Adam Morse about his Super Bowl advert for the Guided Frame app for the Google Pixel. Hubert Pavalkovich will be trying something called PickyBot, and Callum Stoneman will be getting hands-on with Braille screen input in iOS. Welcome in to Callum Stoneman and Hubert Pavalkovich. Gentlemen, good to be back once again. Let's come to each of you and find out what's grabbing your attention in the world of technology this time. Callum, let's come to you first.
Well, what's grabbing my attention over the last week or so has definitely been all the announcements from the Worldwide Developer Conference, which we're going to get into a little bit later. But I haven't really mentioned this, but for the last couple of weeks, I've been trialing some new audio gear that I've managed to get my hands on, which, I mean, no one's complained on the shows so far, so I assume I'm still sounding good. But I've had a bit of a revamp of my recording setup for doing these shows and for doing other similar podcasts and stuff. So what I previously had... It sounds a little bit amateur, to be honest, because what I've had previously was a Rode NT USB mini microphone. Catchy name, I know. And that was just a little microphone, a little USB microphone that plugged straight into my laptop. And that's what I used to do all my recordings. And that was okay. But since I moved away from macOS and started using Windows more, the difficulty was being able to record my iPhone, you know, and being able to record external devices for demos. And I'm not going to get too technical, but there's quite an easy way of doing that on the Mac without needing additional hardware. But on Windows, not so much. And it got, one thing kind of led to another. It was like, if you want to record your phone, then you need an interface. If you get an interface, then you're going to need a different microphone because most interfaces use XLR. So I've now got the Focusrite Vocaster 2 interface, which is very popular in the blind community. Really nice tactile physical buttons, really nice and easy to use. You can really feel the difference in the buttons, you can feel all the ports, and I can connect my smartphone to it and any other device really by Bluetooth to record. So it's a really nice little setup actually. I'm really impressed with it.
Okay, the Focusrite Vocaster with those tactile controls. Hubert, what is pressing your buttons this week?
Robotic hoovers / vacuum cleaners. So I am currently, I've already purchased one. It's a bit of a risky one because I'm not actually sure how accessible it's going to be. So it's a little bit of a test that I'm going to do. So I've been looking for one of these roaming vacuum cleaners that you can set off and off it goes, trying to, you know, help with the dog hair situation with young Caesar and stuff like that and try to make it a bit easier. So I've been trying to find one that will be accessible, and I've been asking for recommendations, and it took a while for people to get back to me, so I just went and purchased one. And of course after that people then started sending me recommendations, but yes, I have purchased one from Samsung, which works with your good old A-Lady and the SmartThings app. So I'm not sure how accessible it's going to be at the moment, but we'll find out. I'm picking it up later today.
Okay, well, we want to hear all about that, Hubert.
Yeah.
Definitely. Once I figure out how it works and what it does, a demo will hopefully happen.
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing about the smart vacuum cleaners, when I read about them, people tend to say, oh, you know, you need to use it every day, and sometimes you need to prepare the area where it covers, and you still need to clean up bits and bobs yourself. Like, they're not always 100%, but they can help you keep on top of it. And then, of course, the other issue is stairs.
Yeah, I think the ideal plan with this at the moment is just for it to take care of the downstairs just to make things a little bit easier. I mean, it's not going to be perfect. I don't expect it to. It'll be interesting to see what it can do. I mean, what I've read about it, it's quite funky. Apparently, if the filter or the box fills up and it needs to clean itself, it will go off cleaning itself at the little clean stand that it's got with it and then carry on resuming its work. So it sounds all shiny bells and whistles, but we'll see what it's actually like.
Yeah, and presumably you still need to empty the bin, right?
Well, yes.
Yeah, the Smart Things app is reasonably accessible. We use it for our Samsung washing machine. And I mean, obviously, I don't know how it's going to work for a vacuum because of very different devices. But for the washer, at least, I mean, it's all right. It takes a bit of getting used to. But yeah, it does work with VoiceOver, at least. It might be one of those things as well, where even if the app's not very accessible, once it's set up, if you can just shout at your smart speaker and just tell it, you know, vacuum the living room or whatever, that might be a way of getting around it.
Mm. We've got Home Connect, which I think is sort of an alternative to Smart Things. So we have that connected to our dishwasher. And so then you can find out how much time is remaining. And, you know, it sends you little notifications when you need to top up the salt or the rinse aid. That seems to work quite well as well. So let us know what apps are you using for your smart home appliances. And like Hubert, are you thinking about dabbling with a robotic vacuum cleaner? Do let us know. And Callum, by the way, you are sounding fabulous as always. Thank you very much. So stick around. Hubert, Callum, it's another Tech Talk.
If you are a fan of American football and watch this year's Super Bowl Sunday TV coverage on the 11th of February 2024, you may have noticed that one of the ads featured in the ad breaks was for Guided Frame, an app on Google Pixel phones to help us as visually impaired people take photographs like everyone else does. Well, joining me now here on RNIB Connect Radio is Adam Morse, the filmmaker behind that ad, who just happens to be blind too. Hello, Adam, and welcome to RNIB Connect Radio.
Hi, Toby. Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Of course, we're going to talk about that Super Bowl ad. But before we do, Adam, I wondered, how did you get into filmmaking? And I think it was whilst you were working as a production assistant on the film City of Life that you noticed that things were going wrong with your eyesight, which must have been sort of quite a bit of a terrible time for you at that time.
Yeah, it was a very, hard time going through the sight loss initially and having to wait for the diagnosis to understand what was happening. You know, the not knowing, I think, was the most difficult part, because it did take months before, you know, the tests were, you know, led to the diagnosis of LHON. And, you know, even the period following that, having to readjust to being a blind person, of course, that comes with the struggles, like, you know yourself and obviously many of the listeners. But the way I got started making films was in my bedroom as a kid. You know, I was a child with a webcam and, you know, Windows Movie Maker on my PC, just, you know, playing around with friends who would come over, doing silly short sketch films and just being creative and having fun. And that was from a really young age, maybe kind of as early as 12 years old, I was starting to make films. And it wasn't until I left secondary school and started looking for work in the film industry as an assistant when I got the opportunity to be a runner on a feature film in Dubai, City of Life, like you mentioned. And it was out there where I first started noticing the early signs of deterioration in my eyesight.
I suppose some people might have thought, well, that's it, your filmmaking career is over now, you can't see as well as you did. But you decided to carry on, and you did make a short film called Window, not only to prove to everyone, but also to prove to your brother that you could make films as a blind person.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, also to prove to myself, if I'm really honest, I had to prove it as much to myself as anyone else, because, I mean, you know, like you say, it's much easier to accept defeat in that it's maybe not, or, you know, doesn't seem as possible to pursue a career as a filmmaker, as a blind person, because of the lack of people who are doing it or have done it. And in fact, there was no reference for me of anybody that had done the things that I aspired to do in the business as a blind filmmaker. So I actually did have that brief kind of acceptance, or I resigned myself to the fact that maybe I won't make films. Maybe I'm not going to be an actor. Maybe I'm not going to actually have the chance to, you know, live my dreams and be a storyteller and an artist. And I kind of put it on the shelf and shelved those dreams, thinking maybe there's something else I have to do with my life and find a different profession to explore. And it was definitely a process of me taking the time to, like I say, readjust, but also do the shadow work, I call it, you know, that daily mental workshopping in my own mind to actually make a consistent effort to think about things differently and reprogram my brain in my thought processes of not focusing on the limitations, not allowing my mind to go into those negative, dark, cynical places where, kind of by default, you can easily get dragged to.
Was there something that sort of made you think I could carry on as a filmmaker who's blind?
Yeah, and I think that was just simply my own relationship with my brother as much as anybody else. I was going to say my relationship with myself, but having to actually address how I would be able to live a life where I could, you know, be happy and or at least content in knowing that I've done everything I could to make it a reality. And, you know, my father once told me that in life you regret the things that you don't do. You don't regret the things you do, you regret the things you don't do. You know, opportunities missed or paths not taken. So, you know, that was ringing in my ears, and I kept thinking about those words and that sentiment. So I thought, well, you know, I've got to give it a shot. I've got to try and push and prove that it is possible to become a filmmaker, you know, with blindness. And my brother, you know, who went blind with me at the same time, the same diagnosis, same condition, LHON, 3 years younger than me, I wanted to set an example for him. I wanted to inspire him because, you know, we both obviously took it hard, but, you know, him being younger than me, I think took it harder at the time. And so I wanted to, like I say, you know, give him that example of what was possible. And, you know, to this day, I still want to try and, you know, blaze a trail for the next generation of blind artists to use me as a reference point that I never had.
And obviously you did prove that success, not only with Lucid, which was released on Amazon in 2020, where you won a Best Director at the Golden Movie Awards, and your Super Bowl sort of Google guided frame ad was not only shown during probably the most watched TV night in America, but probably the most watched TV night across the world, but also had millions of sort of views on YouTube too. How did the sort of ad come about? And were you given a sort of free hand in the story and the look and feel of the ad, which does sort of showcase a blind man getting on with his life and using the Guided Frame app to document his life like everyone else does?
Well, how it came about, they reached out to me directly and knew that they wanted to make a film that was authentic to the blind experience. And they thought that the best way of achieving this was to work with somebody that had a personal experience, someone who lives with blindness. And the, you know, there's not many blind filmmakers who are established, you know, and like myself right now, who, you know, have that credibility and visibility online, you know, in the press and the media. So obviously I was on the radar, and then they reached out directly and said, we want to do this with you. And it was actually very collaborative, you know, in terms of how the thing came together conceptually and stylistically, how it was executed. It was all very collaborative. The world of advertising is very different to my real bread and butter, which is making, you know, feature films and narrative films. When you make films as a director independently, you know, you have a lot of autonomy in, you know, how you translate your vision on the screen. But, you know, with advertising and commercials, you know, there's a lot more people involved, you know, briefs to follow and sort of, you know, brand values to keep in mind and et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, there was, you know, a lot of really talented people that I got to work with on making that Super Bowl film. And the one thing where I felt like I was very empowered to put my stamp on it was in actually being able to create that forced perspective of translating the blind point of view. And so, you know, there was complete trust by everybody involved, from, you know, the Creative Labs team at Google to Miami, the agency and production company Smuggler, and everybody involved who just kind of lent on me to try and portray that POV. And I always knew that I wanted to impair the lens physically to make it real, because I feel like, for me, even when I had full sight, you know, the first 19 years of my life before I went blind, and I could fully appreciate aesthetical imagery, that the human brain knows if you're watching something artificial, no matter how sophisticated the CGI or the computer generated effects can be. There's just something in us that knows if you're watching something that's not organic or real on the screen. So I didn't want it to just be something that was created on a computer. I wanted to actually really impair the lens. And so I had done something on the window, my short that you mentioned before, my first kind of professional film, that short film where I had put cling film, you know, saran wrap over the lens of the camera to kind of create a drunk POV. And so when I was thinking about that, I was like, okay, well, maybe you could do something else. And then see the inspiration came for using Vaseline, petroleum jelly, and we tested it and it worked tremendously well in the tests. Everybody was really pleased with the results, and it definitely created the desired effect in making it more visceral and real, because you're watching something real of an impaired point of view.
I think it's great to have that perspective and for people to see that as well. How does it work for you on set when you're making an ad or working on a feature film?
So I'm very, very collaborative and open as a collaborator, where I like to be all ears for ideas, no matter where they come from or who they come from. And obviously it's my job as a director to filter those ideas and, you know, hone in on my own instincts artistically and finalize and pick the taste choices that, you know, appeal to me, that I think will be the most interesting ways to, you know, go about an idea or an approach to a scene or a camera shot or whatever it is. When it comes to, you know, directing the actors, I know that process very well, with my background being a performer myself. Before I lost my eyesight and I left school, I was in the theater working on stage as an actor, and I'm still an actor to this day. So, you know, I can communicate that process to an actor in terms of helping them, you know, navigate, you know, an emotional journey and helping them through that process. But when it comes to, yeah, directing the camera, because I have a little bit of partial peripheral sight left remaining, if I put my face to a giant screen and kind of move my head around through the corner of my eye, I can still appreciate an image somewhat and then actually, yeah, have an influence over the framing and the composition of the frame, of, you know, how I want to position the camera, directing the movement of the camera, you know, swinging different lenses. Yeah, I'm ironically very, very visual filmmaker, despite being blind, on the blind spectrum.
Well, I think there's also a thing about, you know, I think we, as everyone says, and I think we all know this, that we use our other senses. And I think you can also pick up from not only is what people are saying, but just sort of as an atmosphere, or you can pick up on something and know that something's happening.
Absolutely. I think that's something that, I mean, you've absolutely nailed it there, because a lot of people, you know, comment on, oh, well, you know, your hearing must be sharper and to hear things. And that's true. Yes, of course, you know, as you know, your other physical kind of senses do heighten and more sensitive to, you know, hearing and taste, touch, whatever. But it's not just about hearing what the best take is or hearing if somebody's telling the truth as an actor and is genuine and hearing if they're really present and connected. You know, it's about, yeah, your third eye, your mind's eye, being able to download from your imagination. But really, it's about instinct. I think the power of instinct and being able to pick up on an atmosphere, like you say, and vibrationally be in tune with the frequency of an environment. And that tells you so much more than I think your eyes can.
Adam, as you say, you're not just a filmmaker, you're also an actor, amongst other things, and you were in the Apple Plus TV series C, and maybe a bit of a blind action star in that one, doing your own stunts. Real equality there.
Yeah, I had a great opportunity there to, you know, do a few episodes as an actor on the show and play a bad guy, which is always fun. I love playing bad guys. And kidnap or abduct one of the heroes and end up having some fight scenes. And so, yeah, the training was, you know, the sword fighting, the horse riding, the stunts. I went in with the confidence I could do it, you know, trying to show people around me that the stigma that's associated with blindness really does not apply anymore. I mean, whenever it did, I mean, in terms of that negative stigma of, you know, everybody from the blind spectrum being painted with the same brush or put in the same box. And so for me, I really wanted to insist that I would do my own stunts, and so that, you know, people can see me as a blind person on screen doing things that maybe haven't been done before by a blind performer, like riding horse and fighting and doing all of these stunts. And so that was important to me, again, to prove to myself as much as everybody else. And, you know, again, just set an example and try and, you know, reshape that whole kind of paradigm of blindness and disability stigma.
And we do seem to see a lot more disabled and blind and partially sighted people on the big screen, the small screen, and on stage as well. Do you think that for blind and partially sighted people who want to get into the film, the TV, the creative arts industry, that things are getting better for people?
Yeah, I think we're going in the right direction. I think, you know, there's still issues that need to be addressed when it comes to representation. I believe that although, you know, people may have the right intentions, decision makers, let's say, there are some that, you know, kind of use this as a box ticking exercise when it comes to hiring. And although that can be obviously a really good thing for people from the community to get their chance to be seen or to work, it's a double-edged sword because, you know, if you're given an opportunity when you don't deserve it, and or you maybe you're not ready for that opportunity, but it comes to you and you, because of, you know, a mandate or a quota that needs to be met, then, you know, maybe, you know, the community isn't going to be represented in the right way. And again, it goes back to that stigma and the kind of stereotype, you know. And for me, I want to change that. I want people to understand that there are so many, you know, differently abled, you know, abilified superheroes out there who may not, you know, they may live with some form of condition or impairment, but as artists, they're definitely not disabled in any way. In fact, they're, like I say, different. They have different process, and they're actually enabled to do amazing things and showcase their talents. And so I think, you know, it's a case of making sure that people, you know, from the disability community get the right training and support, mentorship, so that when the opportunities do come, they're ready and that they can shine and, you know, be a you know, a great example and deliver quality work and let the work speak for itself, so that decision makers can start thinking differently about the disabled community when it comes to, you know, hiring practices and, you know, the opportunities that are available to people out there. And so for me, yeah, my foundation that I've set up, Crystal Vision Foundation, the whole purpose of the organization is to give mentorship to the people out there who do want to break into film and TV, who live with blindness. And ultimately, I want to scale the organization to support people, to support everybody from the disability community, not just blind people who aspire to be in the arts in general, not just film and TV, you know, every kind of art form out there, and, you know, help them get discovered and seen.
Adam, if listeners would like to find out about the foundation and follow you and the work that you do, are you on social media? Can people follow you there? And is there a website that people can go to?
Absolutely, yeah. So you can follow me at the Morse Force, and the foundation is at Crystal Vision Foundation. So, you know, approachable and reachable. If anybody out there listening to us right now wants to get in touch, please feel free. I'm always here to try and help people in the community. If anybody does want to reach out, they can, you know, send me a message on Instagram at the Morse Force, at the Morse, like my name, Morse, M-O-R-C, and then Force, F-O-R-C-E.
Well, that's fantastic, Adam. And thank you so much for chatting with me here on RNIB Connect Radio and telling me more about not only your filmmaking, your acting, but also about that fantastic Google Super Bowl ad too.
Thanks, Toby. My pleasure.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
Like many of us, I have a lot of apps on my home screen. And for quite a while, it was a bit of a mess, I'll be honest. I had about 6 pages of different apps and they were all in a bit of a random order and it didn't really make any sense. And obviously, because it's my phone, I've sort of got used to it, but it's still, you know, as someone who likes to be organised, doesn't do very well at it, but I like to be organised, it just annoyed me. You know, things weren't very easy to get to, it wasn't very logical. So I thought there's got to be an easier way to do this. So quite a while ago now, maybe about a year or so, I had a bit of a play around and moved everything into folders. So if you have a look at my my home screen now, this is what we've got.
Social folder, 11 apps, 1 new item.
So there are all my apps related to social media.
Navigation folder, 14 apps.
Again, self-explanatory. There are all my navigation apps for transport and, you know, booking train assistants and getting around, those sorts of things.
Blind folder, 9 apps.
Blind, that's things like Be My Eyes, Seeing AI, Envision, the Guide Dogs app, all those kind of things.
Shop and banking folder, 15 apps. Entertainment folder, 13 apps. Home folder, 13 apps.
There's a few more of those as well, but, you know, you get the idea. Everything's in its own little place, and that's kind of nice. That helps a bit, makes things a bit easier to find. But it turns out, all along, there's been an even easier way if you use Braille screen input, which I do. I use it all the time. Now, this isn't anything new, but I didn't know you could do this, and I'm sure I'm not the only one, so just thought I'd give you this quick tip. So if you go into Braille screen input from anywhere on your home screen, you can then start typing the first few letters of the app that you're looking for. When you find the app that you want, you just do a 2-finger swipe to the right and you're instantly placed into that app. And it doesn't matter where the app is, so I'm on page 2 at the minute of my home screen, but I can still type in an app that's on page 1 or page 3 or page 4. It doesn't matter, it just searches the entire device. So I'll show you this now. So if I turn my rotor to, I've turned my phone into landscape mode, turn my rotor to Braille screen input.
Braille screen input, orientation locked, landscape, screen away mode, 6 dot, contractions off.
Now we got a lot of hints there, but basically it's gone on to Braille screen input. Now let's say I wanted to open the FaceTime app. I just start typing the words FaceTime.
F, 6 apps, Face A, 2 apps, C.
And it's got 2 apps, so if I do a 1-finger swipe down.
Facebook, FaceTime, Facebook. FaceTime.
I'm just cycling through those 2 apps that have that word. So I want to do FaceTime. So
Facebook.
Swipe down.
FaceTime.
And there's FaceTime. 2-finger swipe right.
Opening FaceTime portrait. FaceTime edit button.
And there we go. I'm straight in to the FaceTime app. So when it starts telling you how many apps there are, you can then do a 1-finger swipe down. Well, a 1-finger swipe up or down really will cycle through the results. And then when you find the one that you want, you just do a 2-finger swipe to the right. Similarly, if there's only one result, then obviously you'll only have the one app, so you can just start typing. So I think a good example of this one is Aira, because I think there's no other apps that start with A-I-R on my device, I don't think. So if I show you that, just how easy that is to get
to. Social folder, 11 apps, 1 new item.
So I've gone back to the home screen. Let's go to Braille screen input again.
Braille screen input, orientation locked, landscape. Screen away mode, 6 dot, contractions off.
You don't have to wait for those hints to finish before you start typing, but I'm just doing that so that I don't talk over the speech. So if I start typing Aira, that should be the only result. So I should be able to do A-I-R and then a 2-finger swipe to the right to get me straight into Aira.
I-R. Opening AeroX portrait, AeroX. Home then, heading.
And there we go. There's the Aira app open on my device, straight there. The one that I use most often is WhatsApp. That's probably the app that I use most of the time. And I'm just going to show you something with that, because you might have heard when we got those hints that it said contractions off. So you can't use contracted Braille on this part of the screen. You can only use grade 1. So if I go back to the home screen and go to Braille screen input again.
Braille screen input.
Now if I start doing WH, if I try and do the WH sign in grade 2, it's not going to do anything. So it's not going to enter in any grade 2 signs. But if I just start typing the letters normally, WH.
W, 9 apps, H, 2 apps, what 3 words?
Swipe down.
WhatsApp.
Click to the right.
O. Portrait, WhatsApp, more, button.
And there we go, straight into WhatsApp. I use this all the time. as I said, this has been around for a good few years. I don't know exactly what iOS version, but it's been around for a while. I just had no idea about it. It was actually Dave who told me about this when I saw him using it. And this has really speeded up navigating through apps for me. I think it's brilliant.
Callum Stoneman there with his demonstration of Braille screen input on iOS. And Apple have, of course, made a bunch of announcements this month, but actually there were some last month as well. Callum and Hubert join me now. Let's start, gentlemen, with what's new in terms of accessibility. We were talking about Braille screen input there. They've made some changes in the next iOS.
Yeah, they have. So it sounds like what you're going to be able to do in iOS 18, well, first off, something that we know is definitely coming is that you can have Braille screen input as your default keyboard. So as soon as you go into an edit field, you won't have to do that rotor thing to navigate around to Braille screen input. You can just have it as soon as a text field pops up or as soon as you double tap on a text field, you're instantly put into Braille screen input. But also, and we haven't had a chance to play with this yet because it's in very early beta, but from what people are saying, there's a new navigation mode in Braille screen input, or a command mode, I think is the proper name for it. And if you go into that, you know, if you connect a Braille display to your device, you can do those corded commands. So, you know, space and dot one to navigate backwards, space and dot four to navigate forwards. There's other corded commands to navigate through the rotor and to navigate various items on the screen. Well, apparently you're going to be able to do all of that from Braille screen input on the touchscreen itself. So a little bit, the best way I've had it described, a little bit like one of those little Hable 1 keyboards that allows you to navigate using Braille commands. It's going to be like having one of those directly on your screen, which I can see being a big benefit, you know, for those who struggle with, obviously some of those voiceover gestures can be a bit clunky, a bit awkward, a bit difficult for people to get their hands around.
I'm a huge fan of Braille screen input. I use it all the time, but I know it's a bit Marmite, and obviously not everybody knows Braille, and some people who do know Braille just can't, for whatever reason, get on with it. Hubert, let's bring you in terms of Apple's recent announcements. What for you do you think is the biggest sort of implication in terms of accessibility for blind and partially sighted people?
I think I'm always curious, and naturally being a full-time voiceover user, I'm always curious about little things that they are adding to voiceover. The only two things I've heard, and again, not much has been unfortunately revealed about this, but I'm hoping more will come with voiceover. They've got new voiceover voices, which I discussed before, as mixed opinions on it as to whether we need more voices. But there's more custom controls, such as a custom voiceover volume kind of volume control or volume rotor. I'm kind of curious as to whether this will be something like what I love in Jaws on Windows, which is the volume mixer, which is quite a nice function I'd love to see with voiceover, where you can kind of control individual volumes of certain apps. So you can, for example, have like something like music or radio playing in the background while you work away on your phone. I mean, technically audio ducking does that, but it's a bit kind of frustrating with the audio going up and down with the music. So it'll be quite interesting as to what enhancements exactly are done fully with that. And of course, there is the whole bunch of things which, again, not all of it is known, which is all about AI, as in Apple Intelligence, which will make Siri much smarter, which without going too far into it, I guess it's about time that something's done. But that's only if you've got, I believe, an Apple iPhone 15.
Yes. So, of course, the big headline for most people is Apple's approach to AI, and lots of dialogue about that last week. Some people expressing concerns about that and about security and things like that. And, of course, Apple offering up, you know, lots of assurances as much as possible. They're going to try and do things on device if you've got a higher end phone with a faster processor. But then, of course, also announcing integration with ChatGPT, so then you can have your AI requests processed online. Any thoughts about any of that, Callum Stoneman? We've been promised lots of improvements for Siri over the last decade, and jury's out, I think, on how well that's gone.
Yeah, I mean, every iOS update, they say, oh, Siri, you know, massive improvements to Siri, and it can now do this, it can now do that. It never seems to really come to life, does it? You know, I remember, was it 2011 or 2012 when they first announced Siri? It was mind-blowing. I couldn't wait to get my hands on Siri. And for a while, it was the best one out there, and it just seems to have got worse. I mean, now it's... I really don't like using Siri, to be honest. It's terrible. So it's about time that some improvements were brought to it. And I think with this new age of AI that we're in, I think we will actually see improvements to it now. I think this is the one time where, if it's the way that I'm picturing it, I think they will have basically ripped up Siri and started again. That's how I'm seeing it. And the integrations with ChatGPT, I mean, yeah, again, it's impressive. I think the difference here is that with Apple's approach to privacy, they're the company that I would trust the most, I think, with something like this. Because apparently, if you ask a question and it determines ChatGPT is going to be the best one to help you, then it will send your question off, but it will send it anonymously. Anonymous, I can never say that. But it will send it off without any, you know, it won't be able to be traced back to you by OpenAI. So they're doing the best they can. The challenge with all these voice services is that they need the data for it to continue learning. But then obviously Apple want to keep everything private. So yeah, there's an interesting improvement to Siri. You know, there's some interesting improvements to Siri. I think this might be the year that I upgrade, to be honest, because I don't think my 13 Pro is going to be running any of this stuff.
Okay. And then, of course, it's not just about AI. We've heard talk about some of the just general, you know, general improvements. We're getting a calculator on the iPad. I was a bit kind of underwhelmed by some of the announcements. I know everybody's excited about AI. What are you looking forward to most, gentlemen? Hubert, let's come to you first.
For me, I was actually really happy. It's a very small thing, but for me, being a heavy user of the activity rings on the Apple Watch, one of my favorite announcements was, I mean, of course, the highlight, the other highlight was the calculator app on the iPad, of course. But you can actually now not only pause your activity rings, for example, if you're ill or if you need a break, you can actually pause them for a week or a day, which I really like, because when I'm ill and, for example, my activity rings take quite a hit then and my averages fall and stuff, I don't like that. I always said I want to be able to pause my goals if something's out of my control that I can't actually close my rings. And also what I like is you can make certain days, you can set yourself harder goals for certain days. So, you know, if you're more active on a Saturday or a Sunday, you can make your rings harder, or equally, likewise, you can make them a bit easier for a Sunday if you prefer to chill sort of thing. So for me, it's a small feature that I really like. And you can also get rid of the flashlight button off your lock screen on the iPhone as well, which I quite like, because the amount of times I've accidentally turned on the torch, absolutely frustrating. So I'm glad you can change that too, amongst some of the little things that have been introduced.
Okay, Callum?
Mine involves the watch, actually. There's going to be the ability to have live activities on the watch. So this is, if you use certain apps that show information on the lock screen, so I think probably the most common one that people would be aware of is Uber. So if you've got live activities turned on, you don't have to go into the Uber app to see, for example, when your driver's pulling up. There'll just be a little thing on your lock screen that says, along with all your notifications, if you've got any, there'll just be a little widget almost that says, you know, your driver is 3 minutes away or your driver is 2 minutes away. And, you know, that will update. A little bit like what you get on the Dynamic Island, I suppose, if you're on the 14 or higher. They're now coming to the Apple Watch, which I'm looking forward to, because rather than having to get my phone out and check those things on the phone's lock screen, I think you're just going to be able to tap the watch and get those activities as well, which for something like requesting a taxi or for, I use an app called Transit recently for bus times, and that shows on the lock screen when your bus is arriving. So if I can just tap the watch and get that, that'll be a nice little improvement. I'm looking forward to the Braille screen input improvements as well. They're going to be interesting to try out. I just want to clear something up, by the way, when we were talking about the improvements to Siri. It's only the AI features that you won't be able to get if you've not got a 15 Pro or the new device when it comes out. You'll still be able to get iOS 18 and all these other new features that we've been talking about. It's just the AI stuff that you either won't be able to access or might just be a bit restricted. But iOS 18 itself goes quite far back, I think as far back as the second generation SE.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of other things as well, right? We can't really do a kind of a comprehensive rundown. You have to go and listen to the whole thing. But I was quite interested in the sending messages via satellite. So when you don't have a cellular signal, you might still be able to send a text message. That was one of the promises. Redesigned photos app. It'll be interesting to see what that feels like with VoiceOver. Tap to cash, so you can send some money to somebody else, just by tapping your phones together. Looking forward to that.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, you have no excuse for that fiver you owe me now.
There you go. And a passwords app. I mean, there's already a kind of a password section in settings, so I just guess they're pulling that out into its own app. And what does that mean for things like 1Password?
Yeah, it's a little bit buried, I think, in the settings.
There you go. Oh, well, lots to think about, lots to chew over. We'd be interested in your thoughts, reflections. What are you looking forward to? What are you not looking forward to? Tech talk at rnib.org.uk. Callum Hubert, thanks a lot.
Let's talk photo descriptions on Tech Talk. So we have showed you before various solutions to help you describe what's going on in the photos on your phone, whether it is the scenery or get some information out of a photo. What I want to show you today is another app that can do that, but also a whole lot more beside. So the app I'll show you today is called PickyBot, and it has been featured on various tech forums like AppleVis, and I'm a bit late to the party with this one. I've not really tried it until now, and I kind of regret that I haven't tried it earlier because of what it can do. So PickyBot does describe photos, and it does it in various different AI voices using artificial intelligence to get the descriptions as well. And the unique part of this app is it can describe these photos using various personalities, which will make a difference as to how it describes it and what the description is and such, which is quite interesting. So we will show you that. However, it also does something else, which has been introduced in the recent update. I think the big difference with this app compared to, say, Seeing AI or Be My AI is the descriptions are more leaning towards expressive and unique personality-wise rather than focusing purely on the main information, i.e. what's in the photo. You still get the information, but you get the additional personality touch, and you can turn that off if you wish.
PixieBot. PixieBot. Camera button.
So it focuses you on the camera button, which means you can use the photo. What I'll show you first is the settings, which only appears if you purchase the subscription. So you've got a few options here. You can pay a monthly subscription charge, which is £2 something, I believe, or you can get a lifetime subscription for $19.99. Or, well, £19.99 if you wish. I've purchased the lifetime subscription just purely because I quite like the app and I like to be able to choose the personalities that it describes.
Settings, heading.
Let's look at settings then.
Closed, voice controls, heading. Select voice, alloy, expressive button.
So you can look at voices here, and I'm going to show you. I'm not going to play you every one of them, but I'll show you the options you've got.
Settings, back, available voices, alloy, expressive. Alloy, expressive, button.
So it repeats it twice and is the button that you need to press to hear the sample of the voice and select it.
Echo, happy, button. Fable, enthusiastic, button. Onyx, serious, button. Nova, fashionable, button. Shimmer, caring, button. None, button.
And this one is simply None, where you get just a voiceover. You can read the description, which will also appear on the screen if not being read out by one of these voices.
Camera button.
Right, so what we're going to do is take a random photo. You can also add your own photos from your photo gallery to describe them, but we'll choose to take one and see what we get. So we're in the studio currently, and I've got my lovely furry companion, Caesar the guide dog, here. We're going to take a photo of him.
Alert. Take photo button.
So I will move so we can take a photo.
Choose photo. Take photo. Capture photo button. Flash on button. Flash on. Capture photo button.
So it uses your back-facing camera. So we're going to capture a photo. I'm just going to move my knee out of the way. And here we go.
Capture photo.
We will now get
settings button
analyzed and see what we get.
Oh, you know, this image just screams cozy and comfortable, right? I mean, look at that big fluffy pup just chilling on the floor. I bet they're the king of this little space, am I right? And the way the room is set up, it's like this is the perfect little haven, you know? The neutral walls and the gray carpet, it's all so soothing and calming. And then you've got that sleek black monitor on the wall and the little tripod-like thing. Ooh, I bet that's where all the magic happens, huh? This room just has such a great vibe, you know? It's like a cozy little oasis where you can just kick back, relax, and let your furry friend keep you company.
So there we go. That is the description. Now, as you can tell, they're quite wordy and all in all, there is a detail in there that you get, but they are probably quite long-winded because they are all about the more expressive side of things rather than kind of just giving you the pure detail. So that's the big difference of the app. Now, what you can also do is query these images and it will answer questions as to what you want to know. So I'm going to ask a question.
Pixiebot, share. What is the image depicts? What is in this image? The display. Page 2, video. Microphone button.
So the microphone button will allow me to ask a question.
Listening, ellipsis.
Is the dog wearing a collar?
Ah, I see, my friend. No dog with a collar in this image, huh? All right, let's take a closer look, shall we? Ooh, this room's got quite a few interesting things going on, doesn't it? I spy a TV, some bags, and what looks like a piece of furniture or equipment over there. No pup in sight, but this space sure has a lot of character, doesn't it? No collar-wearing canine, but plenty of other intriguing elements to explore.
So now I've queried the image, it's actually quite interesting because it has taken the dog out of the image that it has previously described. The dog's not wearing a collar, well, we can't see a dog, so therefore can't see a collar. So that's quite interesting how it got the image better the first time, but when you queried it, it seems to have gotten less accurate. Quite the opposite to what I expected. I don't really get why it does the every now and again, but I guess that's just a processing thing. I'm not sure. Right, so the next thing we're going to do is show you its ability to describe videos. Yes, this is quite revolutionary, I think, where this app can actually describe videos of up to 30 seconds. The descriptions, as I said, and as you've seen here in the photo example, may not be as accurate, but for me, it's all about the future potential rather than what we've got at the moment, because the first edition of these sorts of features, they're always going to be a bit iffy, but it's the future potential that I think we can get with this. So we're going to film the video here. Now, you can add your own videos again from the photo library, but it all depends on the video duration. It has to be up to 30 seconds, so quite short at the moment. And the good thing is, when you record a video, it will actually stop recording once it reaches the 30-second limit, which I think is pretty decent. Right, let's record a video.
Video button.
So we've got a video button, so I'm going to double tap on that.
Alert, take video.
I'm going to double tap on take video.
Record video, zero people. Camera chooser, tilt right, level, camera chooser, back facing button.
So it's chosen the back facing camera, right. And it's now giving me hints level. As to what I can do. So we will keep them on and see how the AI picks up.
record video button. Alert, video recording stopped.
So here we go, it has stopped recording because it reached the limit.
The maximum length for this video has been reached. Okay, button.
So double tap OK.
Zero people. Current position, 0 seconds, off, 30 seconds, adjustable. Retake, button, play, but use video, button.
We're going to tap on use video and see what we get.
All right, let me try to capture the essence of this video for you, my friend.
Pixiebot, heading.
So we're in this dimly lit little room, right? The walls are this pale gray, and the floor's got this dark gray carpet. In the corner, there's this black TV just sitting there all turned off, reflecting the gloom of the place, you know? And then there's this black backpack on the floor with this bright orange thing peeking out behind it. Oh, and get this, there's a microphone stand with another bright orange thing attached to it, just leaning against the wall. Now, the real star of the show is this light brown Labrador retriever sitting on the floor, looking all calm and curious, you know? And this person, they're off camera, but you can see their hand stroking the dog's head, and they're like, so, we're recording. Let me get Caesar's attention. Caesar boy, hello. Ah, man, the dog's just sitting there, tail between its legs, but then it perks up when it hears its name, and it turns to look at the person. The person's like, hello, Caesar, can you say hello to the camera? Say hello to the camera. And they're still petting the dog, but the dog's just kind of looking back and forth like, what's going on here? Hmm. The person's tone gets a bit more playful, like, hello. And then the dog's tail starts wagging, and its eyes are just sparkling with curiosity. Oh, who's a good boy? Who's a good boy? Are you enjoying this? But the dog's ears droop, and it looks a bit confused, you know? The person's voice is all gentle and reassuring, like they're trying to comfort the pup. Nope, doesn't look like it, they say, shaking their head playfully. And the dog just looks up at the person, all confused, and then shifts its gaze to this green, squeaky toy on the floor.
So as you've heard, that is a very detailed description. It even tells you what's being said in the video in majority. Certain things maybe aren't as accurate. I mean, how did it figure out that the green toy is squeaky when it isn't is an interesting story, but I'll be honest, that's probably not the key detail, but it has figured out quite a lot. Again, it seems to have given Caesar a crossbreed rather than a pure Labrador, but again, it's one of these things, I guess. Like I said, it's a new feature, so I'm not expecting it to expertly recognize breeds. But I'd say that's quite interesting, and I think using the expressive personality is quite a good setting here for this particular scene. We're going to try that. I'm going to change the personality to serious, and we will see what we get.
Hmm. This is a rather somber scene we have here. The dimly lit room, the muted colors, and the scattered items all contribute to a sense of solemnity. Yet, at the center of it all, we witness a tender moment between a young man and his beloved Labrador, Caesar. The man's voice is soft and gentle, conveying a deep affection for the dog. His hand rests upon Caesar's head, a gesture of comfort and reassurance. The dog, in turn, gazes up at him with those soulful brown eyes, his tail thumping gently against the floor, a sign of his trust and adoration. It is a scene that speaks to the profound bond between human and animal, a connection forged through love, care, and understanding. Though the surroundings may be grim, the interaction between the man and Caesar radiates a sense of solace and serenity. Ah, the simplicity of this moment belies the depth of emotion it evokes. It is a reminder that even in the darkest of times, the warmth of a loving companionship can provide a glimmer of light.
So there we go. That's a little bit of a different description, and actually certain things it picked up better and more accurately than the expressive voice. So I guess the amount of accuracy can be also dependent on personality, but I think some of it can be even by chance too. I'm sure if I was to reanalyze the video with the expressive voice, it might pick up on very different things than it did, for example, in the first attempt. So there we go. That is Pixiebot. Give it a go. See what photos and videos it can describe for you. And let us know what you think and how interesting and unique you found this. Like I said, I think the potential for this is quite a something as it develops, especially if it can describe longer videos past the 30 seconds limit in the nearby future. Pixiebot, give it a go, and let us know what you think. techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
That's it from Tech Talk this time. We do appreciate your company. Feel free to share and like and let us know if you've got questions, comments, concerns, all that good stuff. We'd love to hear from you. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. But from myself, Dave Williams, Hubert Pavalkovich and Callum Stoneman, until next time, bye for now.
Bye-bye.
See you next week.
Bye-bye.